Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Millennial Dentist Podcast. This is 2 weeks in a row of recording together in person.
2 weeks in a row. And I'm so excited because today, this has been a long overdue.
This interview has been rescheduled five times, I think, because of me.
And yeah, well, not because of you, only like last month. It was a, I mean, he's also been traveling. He's been all around the country, not only here, but also over Paris. I see some photos from, overseas.
So. Well, without further ado, Dr. Shah.
Dr. Paresh Shah.
See, I said it and I forgot.
Dr. Hey, one thanks. And only. You know, the cool thing about you, Dr. Shah, is that every time I hear your name or say Paresh Shah, they're like, I've heard that name. I've heard that guy.
He's an Instagram legend.
Yes. Well, not only Instagram legend, but also a lot of people have, because he lectures. Gosh, he lectures so much that a lot of people talk about you and they know your name and last name. So it's easy. And I'm loving having you on the show. And go ahead and we're talking too much. Go ahead and take
that's
take
part of the course. Doc, why don't you just tell us? Introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit of your story. You're a Canadian. You're a Winnipeg Jet. We're not going to hold that against you.
I know. At least not for this year, right?
Exactly.
So thanks, guys, for having me. It's been a lot of fun connecting with you guys through social media, which is, it's amazing because you now all of a sudden you got this wider circle of friends or colleagues that you meet from all over the place, all countries, ages, cultures. So it's been great. I live in Winnipeg, Canada. I've been living here for over 50 years. It's home. I was born in India, but we moved here when I was just a little kid. And so I've been practicing here. My parents are still here. My mother-in-law is still here as well. And the family, our daughter is a dentist.
In school, right? Or no, she finished in Chicago.
She's graduated. She's in Chicago. She's trying to slowly move away from the cold weather. Like, Chicago is still not there, but she wants the bright lights in the big city. So she's been there for a year. Solo practitioner. I've got a part-time associate. Again, a new one just started about a month ago. Been out 5 years. Nice young lady. Wants to work part-time. So I do everything in dentistry. Like not everything. Like restorative dentist. I'd say probably implants, restorative, some cosmetic stuff, and some interdisciplinary care. And the practice has evolved. I got three full-time hygienists. So it's a busy practice. I only have five rooms. So it's a tight, small 1,400 square feet, but it's very efficient. But I love what I do. I don't do everything anymore. I used to be one of these super dentists, and I'm not. I focus on what I do best. And I got a great group of specialists. Like, if Payray was here, probably be doing some of my implant stuff.
That's an honor. Thank you so much.
No, I stopped doing a lot of that stuff because I was only good at it. I wasn't great at it. So it's like, let's focus on the good stuff.
So let me stop you here, back up a little bit. So when you graduate dental school, did you go straight into owning a practice? Were you an associate? Or talk about kind of early Paresh years.
Okay. So no, I started working as an associate. I did a GPR.
Okay. So you did.
Almost wanted to do oral surgery residency. And then what happened was, so I was 30 when I graduated from dental school, and I did that year. My wife's in corporate finance. She's an accountant, already had her career going, put me through school. And then what happened was, I was thinking about doing oral surgery, and then our daughter Serena was born. And it was like, oh man, maybe I should just get going and start life. So I decided, okay, let's just do it. So I started two associateships, did that for 3 years. And then all of a sudden there's a sales rep, distribution rep that came by and goes, hey, I got a practice for you. And so I meet this retiring dentist, this older Japanese guy, super nice. We had 4 hours one evening. Next thing you know, I'm buying his practice. Started with, three chairs, no hygienist. And you know what? I was like making phone calls to call patients.
Yeah, sure.
And I just sort of built it. And eventually 4 years later, I I built a practice in a strip mall, and I've been there since 99, and it's been great. And I built the practice adding hygiene, you know, one or two days at a time, and then one hygienist, and then one and a half, and then two, just building it up methodically.
Sure. I think that's sometimes a hard thing for young dentists, especially young millennials these days, is like the idea of, because, and maybe it's because of, so even some degree, because of social media and because of just how apparent practices are and successes and pretty practices, that I don't see very often anymore young dentists taking that kind of approach where you take something that's less risky, you know, per se, and you slowly build it up versus trying to come out and buy $1 million practice when you've got 15 crowns.
Yeah, I agree. I still believe, like, you know, you guys have it even more than we do in terms of corporate dentistry. We've got it in Canada, especially in Toronto and Vancouver. Winnipeg also as well. And a lot of my friends have sold, but it's just entrenched in the US right now. Right. And I think, you know, with the debt and everything, it's a hard thing. You and I both know that if you just work hard, you're smart, you'll be able to pay that debt off, because, you know, it's a great career. You may not, you know, be driving them, you know, the, whatever, the Rolls Royce and having a big thing, but you're going to live a good life. But I think, I always tell people, if you're looking for a practice, rather than just jumping for the home run, why not find a practice that actually has a patient base? And sometimes people are so concerned that, oh my God, the dentist's been practicing for 40 years and he's got all these older patients. And you know what? So what? It's a patient base. Like, how much, like, what's the dollar value of a patient when you're buying one or selling one? I don't know what it is right now, but is it $300 or $400? Is it $500? Is it worth $1,000? What is that dollar value? If you have zero patients and you've got four walls and you're in debt with leaseholds and equipment for, let's say, even a 1,500 square foot office, would you agree? Like, if it's not in downtown Manhattan or downtown Chicago, you're going to be in it for anywhere from $500K to $700K, right?
Yeah, easy.
Okay. So let's just say small figures. And all of a sudden you have zero patients, and plus you've got a $300,000 to $400,000 debt. How are you going to do it? Why not find a practice that actually has a patient base? Whether it's 200 or 300 patients, who cares? It's 200 or 300 patients more than something else. You build it, you nurture it, and then you expand or you renovate or you move it nearby and build your office. I don't know. That's just my.
Well, sometimes it's also, I mean, it's a great point. Right now, I have a friend of mine who is 20, right out of school, 2 years, Jay Castle, shout out to him. He left Arkansas to go to Texarkana, Texas, to where he just do exactly what you said. He went to a practice that he took over, or he's going to take over, of an older guy that is slowing down, and he's taking over, versus he could have been in Arkansas in one of those street malls and get a brand new practice. And but what you were saying is what he was doubtful, and he told me, was the cost of trying to fix the problems. Like, how much is he going to be investing into re-educating these people? Because that's another thing that a lot of people scare us, young ones. Oh. They're like, oh, are you going to go to these? Because they want to sell a lot of products to us. That's the thing. Right. They want to sell a lot of brand new products. They're like, well, if I sell you a practice that you can just go walk in without spending any money with me, I'm not going to gain anything. However, if you build a practice right off the bat, I'm going to be your guy and do this. So I think a lot of it is also extra pressure from outside.
Right. So here's the thing. You can take the approach of the field of dreams thing and you build it and people come, but you guys know realistically that is a small percentage. Okay. The bottom line is, in order to be successful and have something, you have to have a patient base and you have to be given the opportunity. If you purchase a practice, or let's say you built a new practice, I would suggest you try and find a dentist that's, you know, within 5 years of retiring, and try and bring them in and slowly transition them and their patients. Hopefully they can mentor. You purchase the practice, but you got patients. Because if you don't have a patient base, you're going to sit around forever. How do you know if you're going to only have 10 new patients a month or 40 new patients a month. You know, there's no sales rep that's going to be able to guarantee you that. There's no lease agent that's going to be able to guarantee you that. But if you've all of a sudden purchased that, you have one opportunity. Yeah, you can blow it.
But you have a lot of at-bats.
Right. But you have a lot of at-bats, because if you've got a patient, like 500 patient base, and at least 400 say, okay, I'll give this Shaw guy a chance, I got 400 opportunities to blow it or to succeed, right? And I just think that's better odds than anything else. Then, so what if they've had all this stuff? Like I had the dentist who retired, didn't do endo, did amazing pin amalgam cores. I mean, they were gorgeous. I could never reproduce them. But all of a sudden, it opened up an opportunity for me to talk about crown and bridge, to talk about crown length, to talk about perio issues and things like that. So I think the approach is to find a mentor. I mean, if you can't afford right away to do a Coicer sphere and do that journey, find a mentor that's going to teach you how to diagnose and treatment plan and learn how to communicate with your patients.
That's so communication's huge.
Problem is also, Doc, I mean, it's easier said than done. Like right now, be honest, nobody can do that. There's not a lot of practices for sale that are decent or the doc. Have you realized that? Like,
it's
so
hard.
Little. There's so many of them are taken over by corporates.
Well, and I think people are too picky, frankly. I think at the end of the day, we don't look past some of the aesthetic things or some of the dentistry they're doing or whatever it is.
We want things to be looking like luxury. Like we are like very millennial. Like I feel like that's also my problem, that it doesn't look fancy enough and I'm not going to like it. Like,
well, and the reality is like, you know, yes, they're like, let's take a dental chair, for example. I mean, I would love to have all ADEX stuff and like, that's a great chair, or even the Sirona stuff. I mean, it's like $100,000 chair or something like that. But the problem is like at the end of the day, the patient doesn't know the difference between that and like a other random chair. So now, yes, is there benefits in a nice chair? And like, I mean, I'm not going to give that an argument, but sure. But the point is that at the end of the day, when we're starting out, when you're trying to make it to next month, when you're trying to pay your bills, when you're trying to cover your notes, I don't think you get the opportunity yet or I don't think you should necessarily take that added risk in buying that kind of expensive stuff. Like to me, have proof of concept, right? Like get in there and show me you can do it. And at that point, 100%. then take it and run for it.
Yeah. So, and I agree with you. So here's what I did. I mean, look, I'm going back 27 years or, you know, 25 years when I got that practice.
It's just, it's the same thing. At one point, we got to move forward also. And
see. We'll get past this. It's interesting though.
But you brought up a good point, because what you do is, okay, so you buy the practice that's there. Maybe, you know, here's what I did. We had five shades of wood paneling. Talked to a painter. They figured out a way to paint it. I then had these old Pelton and Crane battleship chairs with big arms. The patients loved it because if they were having surgery, they loved to grab onto it. But here's what I did. It cost me at that time, I think $1,200. Now it would be about $2,000 to reupholster them to your color. So you've got something for a few years. The key was I wanted to stabilize my patient base. It took me 4 years. Then I was able to afford to move it. And look, 20 years later, I'm in this new place. And now I'm thinking of doing it again. But the thing is, I did what you did, Sully. How you said it is like, don't spend all the money. Do maybe spend 20, 30 grand renovating, fixing things up, touching it up. That'll take you anywhere from 2 to 5 years, get through a lease period, and then you've got your practice. Build up hygiene, build up the rapport.
And look, I like to leverage debt as much as the next guy. But at some point, I'm like, you know, there's a point where it just, like you said, it makes more sense to stair step your way up than it does. Because then you know it cash flows. That's the whole point of why you buy an existing practice. Is day one, there should be money coming in the door.
Because hygiene is
Because of hygiene. Because you have, like you said,
patients. I'm realizing the power of hygiene.
It's an underrated,
underrated. In my world, I'm realizing, man, you could do great things having a hygienist.
Baby was like, I don't want hygienists. I'm like,
and now I'm seeing, man, I'm so missing fast. Out. I'm missing out on this whole side of dentistry that is so much opportunity.
Okay, so you started building your practice, and then let's switch to clinical a little bit. How do you start to dive into all this
education? What grabs your attention to going to all this stuff?
So it took me longer than some of you. I'm like 6 to 7 years out and I'm not enjoying it. I'm just drilling and filling and I'm going like, hey, this is okay, but you know, I'm not enjoying it. And then I got directed to some people at the University of Minnesota in Buffalo where they run the postgrad aesthetic program for the last 25 years. I went and signed up for them and oh my God, I all of a sudden met a group of dentists that were mentoring and teaching and they're still doing it to this day. They're couple of prosthodontists that run the programs and then they've got a bunch of clinicians that help. And I actually mentored in the clinic after I finished. So, you know, and it was three levels. So you start, the first year is 100 hours of just didactic and you meet people like Win Okuda and, you know, Jeff Morley and Jimmy Eubank and some good names in dentistry. And then all of a sudden the next year you're actually doing dentistry on patients. And you're doing it over weekends, and you're learning how to diagnose and treat.
Now, this is what year were this program?
This when I went, it was 1999, 2000, 2001, and those years. But it's still on right now at University of Minnesota.
So it's a three-year program.
Well, you can take it as long as you want. I took it over 5 or 6 years because I just did a little at a time. But it was a continuum, and I finished it at the University of Buffalo. We had to do treat an implant patient. We had to do all this stuff, but it made you think because you'd sit around like if you're in grad school doing treatment planning. During that, I met a group of dentists that were I was in my early 30s and they were close to 50. And I saw them and they had great lives, great families, great practice, and they had passion for dentistry at 48 years old. And I'm like, holy shit.
What are they doing?
What's going on?
It's like they love it. And all of a sudden, they're still friends. In fact, they're coming up in 2 weeks and we're going fishing.
That is
so
cool.
Four of the guys are 70 right now. They're still loving it. they sold their practices. They're doing one day a week, but we're just having fun. But the thing is, it's surrounding yourself with that group, right? Yes.
Amen.
And so that's what I did. Then after my buddy and I finished, because I think you should do the education with someone else so you can share ideas.
Yeah,
and then what we did is, where are we going next? So we did Mish's program. Then it's like, okay, we're done Mish. What do we do now? So it's Coise or Spear. So we spun the bottle and all of a sudden we ended up going to Coise and we did that over a 5-year period.
Yes.
And now we're doing things like, I don't know, we're taking courses from Picos, we're taking courses from Spear, we're taking all of this stuff and we're still doing it because you don't know what you don't know.
Amen.
It's a journey. But as
that's
you
so cool
noticed,
hearing that from you on that side. That's just, right? That's awesome.
What you guys noticed and what you're learning and experiencing through social media, I've done that not through social media, but by meeting them.
By activity, got,
right. Like-minded individuals who are inspiring you. How many of you, with the two of you, like I'm good friends with some of my classmates from dental school, but we don't talk dentistry.
Yeah.
We talk about everything else because we just think differently. I'm not saying it's a bad way. It's just different. We think differently.
No, that's a phenomenal point. And we have that too. It's because, you know, it's interesting. It's such a small group and there may be one or two that are very, you know, motivated to learn or do more, but it's very interesting how quickly things separate from people who are just wanting to go to work,
have a job. It's a job.
Yeah.
Right.
And versus ones who are seriously engaged about, you know, okay. And some of it is, well, they're just, to them, it's more of like a multi-practice business style, you know, which doesn't necessarily engage me as much.
Some of them even get married, they have kids, and that becomes a value to them.
Well, they get caught up in the rat race of just life.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Just the life. Absolutely. And I don't say anything wrong with that either, because they're enjoying, like I had one of my friends that we talked, and I don't see him ever. And he used to be one of the sharpest kids in the class, top 5, top 10, probably. And now he is struggling for the 40 hours of CE. And I'm like,
and that's baffling. Yeah, I'll get that
in the
2
world,
weekends.
Like you are one of the people I would like, and that, what changed? And he's happy at the same time. He's just, I mean, that's
right.
His life.
And you know what?
It is life. It's choices. Yeah.
What I found so interesting over the last, probably especially over the last 12 months, is that the gap gets further and further apart. Because when you start hanging out with people who are ahead of you and know more than you and are, you know, you all of a sudden they start bringing you up, right? Well, then you start to get closer to them and then influence. You're hanging out with their people who are bringing them up. And so you keep getting pulled up. And so, but all the time people are staying the same. Absolutely. And so it's been so interesting. Just because, you know, the more I hang out with people, the more I realize like, wow, like I'm getting, and even on a local level, it's hard to, that's what's so cool about social media and whatnot is because it grows even faster. Because now I'm not relying on a local study club or a local thing. It's an international, you know, kind of thing. Anywho.
Yeah, no. I agree with you on that. It's those journeys are great. And I still recommend with younger dentists, if they can't afford to do one of those two tracks right now. I mean, I'm not discluding or excluding like Panky Dawson. I just don't know enough about them. I know far more about
Do they still exist though?
No, yeah, they do. They're trying to rebrand themselves, my understanding.
Yeah, to me, honestly, I love both Kois and Spears. I think one of the things I love about going to Kois, and I tell all my friends right now, I get a lot of messages as always that like, where should I go? And honestly, I brought it down. I'm like, Kois or Spears, like you got to either one of those because you got to learn the foundation. And if you learn the foundation, because I start the other way around, I was thrown into surgery.
We both realized we couldn't.
I started doing a lot of these full mouth and implants and blood and sinus. And look how cool this is. And then I went to Kois. I'm like, man, what did I miss?
I just came back from his symposium. He's a great educator, but
the value on teaching, the value of them getting into for you. It made a big difference for me is that, like you said, the communication of being able to tell the patient, okay, this is the direction. Do you want to go? Or if you want me to be your quadrant dentist, I just cannot be that one. I can send you somewhere else. But there's that value of telling these people right off the bat that this tooth is not the problem. There's so much more, the bigger picture. And if you tell them that on the pictures, on the scanner, on a printer, on everything, they're like, wow, you're my guy. Like nobody showed me this way. And those are the things.
Exactly. It's one of those things where, I always tell young dentists, I get these messages and emails and texts recently, actually, or direct messages. And they're all like, hey, and probably not anywhere as much as you guys, because you got a lot of followers. But it's one of those things where, hey, where do I go for restorative courses? And so I say, okay, if you're in a position to be able to afford the time and the money, I would head towards Seattle or Scottsdale for these reasons, because it's a continuum and you'll learn a thought process and a system. If you're not right now, then at least, learn some clinical skills for composites, for bonding, and maybe for endo. Those things you can learn through some courses.
Yeah, and there's at least some local things or weekend.
Some like techniques. Those are techniques and stuff.
Those are techniques. I wouldn't recommend a full implant course like that. I think that's a continuum that you need to learn to understand everything, right?
Well, because the problem with the weekend course is you learn one aspect of it. Looking back in hindsight, when I learned to place implants, it was like, I learned to place implants. I didn't learn how to restore an implant, how to put the implant periodontally where it needed to be. Yeah. It was just how to put a screw in a bone, you know?
That was my first implant course, my first two. And then you all of a sudden need mesh, and it's like, holy crap, there's a lot more to it. And then,
you were mission informed.
I respect all of that, and I just don't want to spend as much time there. But
Someone was saying quote that talks about like you, how the more there's, an effect. What is it called? Oh, it's going to kill me. Maybe you know it, Doc. There's an effect that basically says that as clinicians, or as really any industry, I think, there's a curve. That on one side, like the x-axis, you have confidence, and on the y-axis, you have like your ability to do things or your knowledge of how to do things. And what happens is we start out where we have low confidence and low knowledge. As we increase knowledge, we increase confidence pretty significantly. But then, as that we continue to increase more knowledge, our confidence starts to decrease back down because we realize I'm coming off a peak of like I can do anything. And I'm realizing like I know nothing.
The more you know.
It's kind of interesting.
Okay. Well, my buddy always says you don't know what you don't know. You've probably heard the phrase before, but it's absolutely true. And I think as long as we take that approach, we're always going to improve. The moment we get to the point where we're just, you know, I remember sitting at an airport and there was a dentist locally here, not actually in our city, but in a rural town who's retired now. And he came up to me and I'm sitting and I was planning a lecture and I was just updating something. It was at the Toronto airport and he walks up to me and all he said was, "Hey, I guess if you don't know it now, you'll never know it." And he walked away. And I'm thinking like, dude, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, so that means that everything is the same from 40 years ago when you 30 years ago when you graduated, like nothing's changed. And I didn't even engage him. I just kind of said, you know what? I'm updating things because I always update my lecture because there's new literature all the time. There's new techniques. And you've got to do that. And if you're not, you're staying stale. It doesn't mean that we don't still stick with our foundations, but sometimes those foundations change.
This is a great point. What I want to say is this is such an amazing point you just brought up. And it made me think about all the dentists that are your age. And I look at social media and there are so few of people like you. And that's, there's a lack of people more at your level.
Well, frankly, a lack of mentors, I believe, in dentistry.
Mentors, where I feel like, why, what is it? What do you have for, not to the young ones, but to the ones that are around your age? What happened to them? Or what do you tell them to get back into being so excited? Because I see you, to be honest, I'm just visualizing how excited and when you see a case, when you treatment plan it, or even you want to teach and go speak, I just can see the joy and passion of you wanting to do it. What is this lacking for a lot of older dentists?
You know what? I think, I wish I could tell you precisely, but I think a lot of it was what you were saying earlier, Sully, is that, you know, it's just part, you're kind of in the rat race. You've already got your life going. You've got comfortable, but you've never really been exposed to some of these other people. If you're in your own little bubble and your little circle of friends, you'll never see what's out there. You know, fine, I can get the most bang for my buck with my local dental society, you know, $300 a year, and I can get five amazing speakers in the year and not leave my city. But I'll never know what's out there. And I think part of it is just, you know, being exposed to people in other cities and other countries. We're fortunate that my daughter and wife and I travel a lot. So we meet people and then you all of a sudden meet people and you're going like, oh my God, I never thought of it this way. And I don't think it applies just for dentistry. It applies in other professions. And so I think, again, it's that whole thing of you don't know what you don't know. So it's interesting. I run a Seattle study club here and we started like 9 years ago in that club. We started the club 13, 14 years ago, but 9 years ago as a Seattle study club, we started with 11 people. We're up to 40 now, but it's interesting because I'm getting dentists who have been out around your length of time or even a little bit more in that 5 to 10 year range. And now all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, like we can actually come here in a non-threatening environment and we can ask for help and we can give our input and no one's going to chastise us like we were in school.
Yeah.
And share you've got to... Right. And you've got to create that non-threatening environment, but you also have to create accountability. So if I'm expecting you to come to that and actually bring a full set of records, I got to walk the walk and not come with a pair of casts and a one printed photo. I got to say.
Sure. You know what
I mean? But I think part of it, I'm getting maybe off tangent. I appreciate you listening, but it's one of those things where I just think, I try it as much to open my eyes to some of these people who've been practicing 25 and 30 years to say, you know what, there is more to dentistry than just this. And there's more than just what's in our own town and our city. And it's interesting because now we've actually had, in the last 2 years, we've had a half dozen dentists who've been practicing longer than me join our club. And I go, why? And they go, you know what? Because we want to practice more, but we feel like we're behind the times now, and we don't know how to, We want to do our patients. We're growing with the patients, but their treatments are more complicated now. And we don't know how to treat them. And we want help and we want to learn that. So some of them are actually realizing that. And they're going, okay, I got to learn.
And good for them, because I mean, that takes checking your pride at the door.
Yeah.
You know, 100%.
Which I think is a big problem.
But also that goes along with the power of influence and the mentorship.
Right, yeah.
That there are people like him, and alongside with him, like a lot of different people that are doing these study clubs. Now, tell us a little bit about people that are young. They don't know these study clubs. The Seattle Study Club is one of the most famous ones out there. How does it work? How do you guys do things? Like, what is it? Tell us a little bit about it.
So the Seattle Study Club was founded by a periodontist and an amazing man and a mentor of mine. His name is Michael Cohen. So he's a periodontist in Seattle. So he practices as well. And he created them for a variety of reasons. But the goal is to have what he calls a university without walls, where you're coming in there and you actually have a curriculum. By regular meetings and frequency of education, we find that you can build on it. So you want to meet every 4 to 6 weeks, not just meet 3 times a year. Because as you're meeting, there's frequency. And through those meetings, we usually meet between September and May. We meet about 9 times. There's some social events, but we have treatment planning sessions where we sit down as a group. We have labs, specialists, general dentists, perio, endo, ortho, and we sit and collaborate that way. Then we'll also have interactive meetings. I mean, I brought Jerry Sheesh up. I mean, he's one of the top pros.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're friends with him. You're friends with, you know, Bill Robbins and all
so
these
you can get them in. So now these people, do they get paid by the study club? Do you pay them?
So
there's a yearly membership fee.
There's a membership fee. Now there's about 260 clubs around the world. They just opened up 7 in China and 2 in Mumbai.
Wow.
They have 5. And so we have a whole bunch of them. But what we do is we meet, and then the thing about a Seattle Study Club is I'll use the term non-denominational. You get Panky, you get Spear, you get LVI, you get Dawson, you get Coyce.
It's kind of fun.
It's about having everyone be collegial. Now, other groups like Panky's, Coyce, Spear, they all have their little study clubs as well. So there's a variety. But I would tell young dentists that find a study club that's willing to mentor you. Some of the study clubs, yes, they are directed towards trying to gain referrals. I always talk to those directors and say, look, if you want to build your study club, yes, I realize that it's a lifeline and the referrals are important, but if you don't cultivate the relationship and have an open dialogue and be a good mentor, you're not going to. The moment you're going to be a mentor and you want to help someone place those simple implants or do minor corrective crowding for ortho, they're going to send you the big stuff.
Right.
Well, and that's the kicker. Like as soon as I learned to do ortho, I now refer way more ortho than I ever did.
Right. Because you're diagnosing more.
Exactly. Because you're looking for it. Bingo. Because you don't know what you don't know. You know, you're exactly right. Because you don't, I talk about this with perio and ortho, I think are two big ones. If you don't know it, then you aren't diagnosing it. You're not seeing it. You see recession, you see fillings. You know, you don't see the potential to graft stuff or other problem.
Right.
I love that. That is so true.
To not be stingy with your knowledge. Share the knowledge.
Share the knowledge.
Share the knowledge. I mean, if we know the whys, you know, they say Simon Sinek's why.
Yeah.
You love
that. Yeah.
I love it too.
I love that book. That's great.
But so the study club, we covered the study club. I wanted to touch base with as far as when you do the speaking. How do people get in contact with your future speaking, and what do you have going on?
What are you speaking on right now? What's like your sticks?
Look, I've probably been lecturing for 15 years, but I'd say like major amounts, you know, the big upward curve in the last 2 to 3 years and moving 4 to 5 years. For the longest time, it was just everyday restorative, just talking about everyday stuff, bonding, adhesion, material selection, just how to do everyday stuff and be current. Like, and I always share some literature. So it's not all anecdotal, like, hey, Shaw does it this way. You know how some people, it's just like, hey, I've done this for 25 years. I don't know why, but I do it and it works. Right. Well, you know what? I don't think you're doing someone a service if you're just doing that. Because if you don't have a foundation and you got some people in the audience that just don't understand that, and if it doesn't work in their hands because there's a nuance that you're doing that you're not sharing because it just works, I think that's BS.
No, I totally agree. Do. If it's not repeatable, then why are you teaching it? Yeah.
Right. So, I, you know, when it comes to bonding, when it comes to maybe some cementation procedures, when it comes to diagnosis of how you're going to choose implant positioning or things like that, you got to follow with some of the criteria, the basic foundation. And then, hey, if I want to use a brush, you want to use your thumb, you want to use, you know, whatever you want, that's anecdotal. Hey, it works in my hands to use this paintbrush or this ceramics brush over this tool. Right. Or I like to polish with this one over that. I mean, that's anecdotal. And, sure. And sure, share your tips. But you know what? Make sure you look at the foundation of why you want to do etch, do dentin bonding or enamel bonding, the way the research.
And shows. I love the fact that you said this, but for people that don't know and don't follow or that have not been following you online, because I'm a big fan of his bonding, he shows some great front anterior cases that I didn't know even those shade existed for composite. I thought they were A2s and A1s and maybe A, I mean, well, sometimes. But
and
I mean,
it's kind of cool. And
it's cool so because you share it and then you go speak about it. So it's that's the cool beauty about it. Yeah. You know how you share and what you show.
The other thing is I don't have a problem showing stuff that only looks like crappy or not as good. And the reason is because we learn from it. And the first person you want to learn from is yourself. Like just 100%. Put the picture up. And if it doesn't look good and it doesn't look like our friend Adamo who does like freaking amazing bonding work. And me, I have to work harder at it than he does to make it work. So if I show it, it's like, okay, well, what could I have done different? How could I have improved it? What's missing?
Sometimes a better camera would help too.
yeah, that's a little bit.
Sometimes a better camera. Sometimes if you put a strawberry there and a kiwi, maybe that
I did that with a piece of
that makes it look sexier.
Or stars on the lips. Glitter on the lips.
What else?
Glitter on the lips is the big one. I feel like these.
But no, seriously, no. That's what I love about yours is because it's so real. Like it's so natural. Like I love it because he doesn't even try to be like, okay, look at how luxury or fashion. This is real, and I see that, and I'm like, wow, this is super cool because it's
you want people to understand that, you know, it's okay. Like there are things that you can do. I have a lot of respect for the people that have done the AAC accreditation. I have no desire at this stage in my career, but the process I do believe can be a good process for you to learn. But I'm not here trying to take like 25 pictures over 3 appointments to get that one shot on Instagram to make you guys go like
right. Yeah,
100%.
It doesn't mean anything to me. So anyway, I've been lecturing a lot on that, but also I do a lot of study clubs, and with the study clubs, I a lot of advanced treatment planning. So I'll show cases that I've treatment planned and I've done with my specialist, and all of a sudden I'll show the records, and then we'll get the groups to treatment plan it, and then I'll show how we treat it. And you know what? I'll guarantee you that not everyone will get the diagnosis okay, but the treatment plans are different, and I have absolutely no problem. Well, why did you choose that material? I go, because I like this material. I like Emax for this. Well, why did you graft here? And I go, I wouldn't have grafted. And I go, well, my periodontist chose this. They decided to do that. They decided orthognathic surgery and then ortho instead of doing this. And you're never going to have the right answer, but all of a sudden you're opening up. I'm learning and they're learning. So it's great. And now I guess the things that I'm doing more moving forward is digital workflow. Oh, so much. I have clinical experience in my practice with 6 different scanners. I've used 3 different mills. I have model printer. I'm beta testing a bunch of software. So I have a lot of experience with digital workflow. I've been doing it for over 9 years. So I'm trying to teach people not about picking what necessarily telling them which scanner or what to use, but what the workflow can do to get you from here to here and improve efficiencies, reduce stress, and actually see a profit at the end of the day because of the time you're saving. Plus, the diagnosis and treatment planning using digital technology now is something that's crazy. I see that with you guys because you're treatment planning with your cone beam, right? Well, imagine putting an STL file of a pre-treatment scan, getting your lab or yourself to design a final prosthetic design digitally, importing that into your implant planning software. Now you have pre-teeth, you have the final design that the restorative wants, and now you're planning your implants.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
All B. Yeah. And you're telling me that that doesn't work in a big city where you're in Los Angeles and you want a treatment plan with your group and you got to drive an hour and a half in the evening to try and meet and talk while you can just disseminate that and sit like this, the three of us. We could treatment plan right now if you want.
So 100%. Much. Yeah. So how much are these... I love the fact that you mentioned one thing that was very important throughout your discussion, because I noticed a lot of these CEs and a lot of these weekend courses are paid by sponsors that have a certain scanner to sell certain printer. But what you said that got my attention was very important, that you're not much about the brand of what you use, but what you're actually going to use that STL, which is the format of the file, or the DICOM, what are you going to do? And that is so important. Not a lot of people do that, because a lot of these companies are sponsoring these things to sell these products, and that's how we run. And unfortunately, I've been actually part of them, like, because I always had one. And I'm like, well, the Trios is the only way to go, for example. But no, that's not that's not true.
No. And so I'm in a fortunate situation right now. I'm riding this wave that through study clubs that not a lot of people get that chance, and I'm blessed to have that. I don't know if how long it'll last, but because of that, I've had the ability. I'd say probably 85% of my programs, like the last couple of years and moving forward, are not sponsored by corporate. So I have the ability and luxury to talk about whatever I want.
That
and
is when
it's a beautiful
thing. So when I talk about...
You got freedom, sir. Products, you got freedom.
Right, I do. But the other thing is, the companies that I have been supported with over the last few years, I've told them straight out that if I'm going to talk about your restorative products or your technology, I am going to talk about competitive products. I may spend a little more time on yours because you're supporting this program, but I'm not going to not talk about the other products because I have to have credibility. I've only had one company that didn't like it, and I don't work with them. It's a restorative company. And I'll share that later and not with you
guys. I mean, considering how many
Well, and my thing is too, is like, I always say, like, look, at the end of the day, if, you know, to that point is, if your product can't stay, you know, if all you're saying about your product and what you believe in your product and what I believe in your product, whatever, can't stand up against having a discussion about other products, then what's the point? Like, if we have to be hiding this in the background, then it's not that good of a product anyway. So
it's formula, like a product. Yeah. Have you seen those Formula One drivers and NASCAR drivers that have all kinds of brands? Sometimes when I go to these CEs, I see different Henry Schein and then Patterson and then different parts of their body.
Well, and some people are painfully about, like, just terrible about not hiding it. Or like,
not hiding
they just,
it.
Like, it's like, yeah, like they get up there and it's like, oh my biased. Gosh, this, like, is terrible. Like, at least try to fake it a little bit.
But. No, exactly. So, like, for instance, I've done a couple of clubs where we ended up having five different scanners in the same sandbox. It was amazing. And so imagine having Patterson and Benko plus iTero plus Carestream in the same room.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's just, you go to them and just say, listen, guys, it's not a sales pitch. We want to educate. You guys want to sell. We want to get them in their hands and let them play with it.
Yeah.
Just show them how to play it. Don't trash the other company. Just say, hey, Sully, this is how you use it. This is how our software works. And let them decide.
Because at the end of the day, you're pushing technology. Like, technology rises the tide for everybody.
100%. Right. Absolutely. And my buddy and I are doing our own program here in Winnipeg. It's a two-day program in November. And believe it or not, we're creating our own content ourselves. But believe it or not, we have, okay, here we don't have Benko, but we have Sinclair Dental. So they're the equivalent of Benko. So we have Sinclair, Patterson, Shine, Carestream, and Nobel. All of them are going to be there. We're going to have six scanners. We're going to have two or three softwares. And all of them agreed that, hey, and they're not paying our honorariums. Okay. They're helping defray costs for the food, for the venues and everything. So that's what they're doing. So it's a nominal fee that they're paying just to help us defray all the lunch and dinner costs. That's all. But they're not paying, we're not asking for honorarium, because what we want is our own content. And we just want them to be there to be able to turn the machines on and allow the people to use it and that's not awesome. Do a sales pitch.
That's cool. Having all and of they, those in one room.
They all agreed. And so it's going to be great. And so it's one of those things. Anyway.
No, that's awesome. One thing I wanted to ask you is that some people might ask, how do you get, like, because you're a great example of somebody who got into the digital workflow. How do you tell somebody your age or even the young dentists right now that are like, hey, how do I get into this digital market of learning more? Is there any CE? Do you teach? How do you tell them where is the first thing they need to do?
You know what? I do, and I've got some programs on how to get a hold of me. You would either just Google me and go on my website, although I have to update my lectures, but they can easily contact me through there or through Instagram as well.
He's now more active on Instagram. That's funny.
Oh, that's how it is, man.
I go to surgery, come back. He's like, oh my God, he's still active.
I know. But those are the ways, like either through Instagram, email, or definitely just Google me on my website. But having said that, yeah, there's myself and a few others that do lecture on all the digital workflow. The difference that me and a few others do is that I'm not here trying to push one particular avenue. I'm trying to open people's minds to understand what's out there and how to make the selection. The final selection is going to be yours. What you want to purchase, your relationship with the company that you're purchasing from, the support.
Yeah, that's huge. Those are, I mean,
right? Those are important awesome things.
Because some people get that. I tell you about the implant companies, for example. You know, and I'm like, look, I place X implant, but that may not be the best implant for you because you may have a really bad rep in your area or no rep, and like you need support. And so you need to find, I would tell you to find a couple good implants you like and then see what the support is locally because you may need that, you know? Like it's more Absolutely. Than just, it doesn't all work for everybody the same way.
Right. And so what bothers me a lot of times is people will come in and they'll just go, oh no, this is the implant you got to use, or this is the impression material you got to use, or this is the scanner you got to use, and it's only that. And I don't buy that. The problem with digital is that it's not the scanner, but it's how all the information is handled after, and it gets clouded, it gets distorted, and all the different softwares that handle it mess it up. And that's where you run into problems. And so you've got to have a great lab, you've got to have the technology there, but you've got to have all the pieces together and understand it. So there are courses that are out there. There are a lot of people that are lecturing on this stuff, and I'm one of them. And there's a few friends that I have as well that are doing that, and I think are unbiased and just kind of share how the workflow fits in there. I feel it's important to also explain to have the team members there, because some of the things that I like talking about is explaining, well, how does the workflow work? Like, how do you schedule? How is it disruptive negatively and positively in your practice? Because you know what? I've tried implementing things and I've had the staff go like, this isn't working, dude. Like, we're not doing this anymore. And it's like, oh, what are you talking about? It goes, well, you know what? We're using this lab. This lab does not have the experience and we're redoing too many crowns. We're sending them back for adjustments. That means you're not making money. So we're refusing to send them to this lab. You got to find another one. Or I don't like the way that, you know, when you're scanning over here, this is not working out well. We should change it because of that. So I listen to them because that is impacting my bottom line and patient care.
So you've got a good team. You've got a very good team because that's what you need.
But you have to do that with everybody. Yeah. And there are times where I don't want to listen to them. And finally, when they go like, listen, you're wasting a lot of time and the patients are inconvenienced. I'm like, oh, am I inconveniencing the patient? Yeah. And you're screwing up my schedule too. So I'm like, all right, okay, let's fix it.
It's so true, though. We hate it so bad. We want to say no.
Oh my God.
But it is so true. I find myself a lot of times I need to hear more and just kind of step back. But that's sometimes
it's hard for young dentists.
Yeah.
Though, because it's hard. It's sometimes hard for, because you're like, especially new owners or new dentists, you know, you're trying to establish yourself as a leader.
and as the dentist, and it can be very, very quickly becomes more of like you're trying to act like a dictator and a boss than it is, you know, and that's a very hard balance to figure that out. But like I was, you know,
tell us about your experience. Go ahead.
Well, gosh, well, mine, I was very fortunate because I would get myself into trouble because I wouldn't listen to them. Mm-hmm. And then dad would be like, you're being a dumbass. Like, but listen to them.
Listening to them because you didn't trust their way or you trusted your way more.
I'm telling you, so much of it's pride. I mean, so much of it is, I don't want this assistant to tell me how to do this, you know? And it's like, I'm going to make it work my way just to prove a point. Right. And then, you know, you realize that.
So here's one of the things that I would recommend people, and I do this. And if you talk to my staff, some of them will say, look, he can be a hard ass at times. And I can, because I make people accountable. If I'm accountable and if I'm talking the talk and walking the walk, I expect them to walk the walk. Now, having said that, when I present something, there's a reason. It will either be a business reason that's been tried, true, and tested, you know, Simon Sinek, for example. I mean, or, you know, why, how do you incorporate checklists and why? I mean, that's a business system.
Sure.
It wasn't learned in dentistry.
Sure.
Or there's some science behind why we do something.
Yeah.
So I always give them a reason. I go, okay, we're going to change, like I changed some of my cementation protocol for zirconia because I learned some stuff from Dr. Sheesh and how, and his studies. And he's like, I would do this and I would try this product because this works and our studies show this. So I went in. And overnight, I changed the procedure, but I gave them rationale. I told them why, because I, you know, some of the literature, and I said, we're going to start doing it this way.
I love that.
Can That's I ask you, important. If you bond your preps after, you prep them after,
I do.
Before you do, you're a big
indirect sealing.
Yeah.
No, I don't really do that. Like what Pascal Magnier talks about.
Right. You don't do that either.
No. I don't, but I don't see any reason why it
Do you do
work.
Air abrasion? Do you use the air abrasion?
I've started doing air abrasion.
I love it, man. I love that thing. It exactly. sticks with everything.
Are you air abrading the tooth or the
both.
Restoration?
Yeah, I do both.
Are you, both. You can do that, or you can take a micro etcher and do that as well.
Yeah.
Right? Does it not get like micro etching stuff all in their mouth everywhere?
No, you can control it with that gauge. Plus your suction, your assistant gets the high volume next door.
It is messy. It is, but you got to clean it up.
But it's good, man. I'd rather that thing stick for 40 years than being their mouth messy for a minute.
Are you doing this on veneers or crowns?
Everything. I stick it to myself sometimes. No, I'm kidding. I stick it.
No, but if you look at some of the studies that they do at the Koi Center too, loves it.
That's why I became a believer after June.
Well, it makes total sense. Yeah. So I don't.
But I didn't know he also, Dr. Koi also said about post-prep bonding. I don't know why I got into it. You just talked about something about bonding.
Good question.
I was like,
I have one big question for you. So we're both huge digital guys and we're millennials. It's all we know. My question is though, is I'm seeing so many, frankly, not just young dentists, but dentists get caught up in a lot of digital stuff that isn't necessarily like efficient digital stuff. And like, I mean, utilizing Combeam and STLs and all this stuff and 3D printing, there's ways that it's predictable and helpful. But then do you kind of feel like that there's also a lot of noise out there? And like, you know, at what point does time become, you know, you see what I'm talking about? I just feel like there's a lot of
designing. Like I feel like a lot of dentists waste a lot of time designing when they need to send into better labs to design. Well,
and then like the 3D printing of aligners is a big one right now. You know, there's just a lot of digital stuff. That's a lot of work.
It's true. It is true.
So here's the thing. I feel I've earned the right to talk about this because I bought my own E4D system, and I had it for 8 years. I sold it to a person in our study club who has 2 country practices. He's loving it. So I paid the money and did chairside for 8 years, 7.5 of those 8 years. So, and plus I've had Trios, Carestream, 3Shape, like the whole thing, TrueDef. Chairside doesn't work in my practice the way I practice now. If I do chairside same day, like one appointment dentistry, I lose money in my chair. But my buddy across the street who has 14 dentists and has CEREC, it works fantastic for them because they've figured out in their workflow how to make it profit. So I'm not here to pass judgment. How many dentists really want to spend $100,000 US or $150,000 Canadian. That's a lot of money. Those are a lot of vacations. That's like a renovation on a house. So unless you fit it in the schedule properly and make it profitable, you're not going to make money off of it unless you change the way you do things. I don't believe that you should buy technology and change your philosophy to fit the technology to pay for it. Because for the longest time, if you had my E4D, I would ask people, how many of you are going to do all your second molars in Emacs? And usually only two or three people raise their hands, and those are usually the Sarakin E4D users. Most of them won't, because they want flexibility to do zirconia, porcelain fused metal and everything. How many are you going to do staining and glazing on your front six teeth? And a lot of them say no, because it takes too much time and they can't make money off of it. Now you can only make money off of 12 teeth, your bicuspids and your first molars. How many crowns are you going to do? I mean, a young practitioner who doesn't have a hygienist, I mean, are you even doing 12 crowns a month? And if you are they all bicuspids?
Like, well, and a hard part too is,
right,
especially on that, on the milling, chairside like milling is the,
right,
the race to the bottom as far as just lab, you know, lab crowns go.
Maybe, right.
You mean the problem, no, it's very competitive. When you started, it was probably $130-$150 a crown, a unit.
Right.
So it makes a lot more sense. Well, when it's $50 a unit from a lab, right, it's like
100%. Outsourcing is huge right now. I really think that the way the practices are right now, you buy a scanner, you have a great lab, and you get a model printer if you want. And the model printer will allow you ultimately to have diagnostic models. You can do little smile design things, and you can do retainers, appliances, and things like that. But have your lab to outsource all of the stuff. Like, you're right. You can plan something and probably get a full contour crown back within 24 to 48 hours. How hard is that, right? For nothing that will look fantastic, but it'll look really, really good. And then if you want a high-end one with a cutback, you'll take longer. But you're going to save a lot of money doing that. The key with digital right now, with people don't understand, is time. And I think some people are just...
No one wants to freaking account with the cost of their time. Everyone's like, I did this whole case for $5. It's like, bull crap. Right. I said you 5 hours. That's $5,000 right, in my book.
Exactly. And here's the thing.
Sorry, that was a soapbox.
No, 100%. Because what happens, and I had this conversation with someone today, and it's people don't realize, I truly believe, in a practice where you've got one to two hygienists and you're doing 100 or more crowns a year, 150 crowns a year or whatever, that you can pay for that scanner in 1 year in time. I really believe that. And here's why. People are not being honest. When you've got an analog process, you're telling me 100% of the time you have zero adjustments.
Yeah.
I don't buy that for a second.
You're closing your eyes to stuff.
Okay. But if I can save you, let's just say a small amount, 15 minutes of time, whether it's on the front end or the back end, usually on the back end of delivering a crown. Let's not talk about all the implant workflows and smile design and all the other stuff that you can do with digital that you guys already know about, but just a single crown. If I can save you 15 minutes of time for each one at the end of the year, if you total up, I'm throwing out a number, but let's say it's a week worth of time. What's a week worth to you? That's 1 week of vacation. That's probably the cost of a scanner for 1 week for a lot of 100%, dentists.
Yeah.
It's 1 week with your kids, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm.
One whole week of vacation if you want. So all of a sudden, if you can save 10 to 15 minutes a unit, and you multiply that by 100, that's a lot of time, boys. That's a lot of time.
Well, let me say one thing, because I want to really put my thought on this too, is I think that concept is more important just conceptually than just a discussion with a scanner or any piece of technology or anything. Like, to me, when dentists can start to grasp that concept, they will be so much more successful, because one, they won't be held, because the reality is like, if you just look at from a number standpoint, mm-hmm,
you know, it may not,
it's going to kill you.
It may not, it's going to kill you. But if you look at like the bigger picture, okay, mm-hmm, and you start to see what technology does for me, how it makes my life easier, how I shoot, you know, I get professional satisfaction out of doing digital dentistry. Like some things so may cost me more money to do it that way, but I enjoy it more, you know?
And so do I.
And so
I'm like you.
At some point, I challenge dentists to, yes, numbers have to work. Cash flow has to be good. You have to, it has to work in your practice. But at the end of the day, sometimes you have to just look beyond some of this and realize that, you know what? That week is really important to me, you know, and it's worth me, you know, doing that. Or and it may cost me some time, you know, but whatever it is. So I think your point conceptually should really be extrapolated out to so many different things other than just like, you know, just one scanner.
Yeah. With, it just, I wish I could, you just can't give hard data. That's the only hard thing to do. But two of you know that because you utilize it.
One thing I like to say, because we're at this topic, I want to ask you this and give us a little bit of your experience and your guidance into how to make a good relationship with the labs over the years that you have done. Now, I know you laugh about this, but honestly, with most of everything, I feel like more and more I do this is that lab is 90% and I'm 10%. Like it is so important, everything, the communication. And trust me when I tell you, I put in maybe movie together, like a PowerPoint of a case, like this is the before, this is how we're looking forward. And ultimately, sometimes after all of this, I'm still not getting what I would what I put out.
No, and you know what? I got to tell you something. There's a lot of labs that just don't understand it and they're not good. It's as simple as that. I've gone through a lot of issues and a lot of problems over the years.
What is your secret? What have you learned that you want to share with us? What did we do? Or is this just the ongoing problem with the dentists and labs?
For me, it's been an ongoing problem with labs, and I finally switched over from a lab. You know, there's some labs that I dealt with. When I first wanted to go digital, I changed and I talked to the lab I used for 22 years, and I basically parted ways. We still haven't talked to one another, unfortunately, 2 years. Just met once to say hi. But it was tough, and I tried 7 different labs, and all over, not only in Canada, not only locally, but even in the States. And then eventually I found a lab that I thought really had some good digital experience, and I all of a sudden was having great success. And then all of a sudden it just dropped overnight and I was getting crap and they kept blaming me and my scanners. And so I started sending the cases to other labs, parallel cases, and I'm not having the problems with other labs. So part of it was just the relationship was starting to fracture. So I moved away. And so now what I do is I kind of interview labs. I say, look, these are the things I'm looking for. This is how I work. This is what I'm trying to see. And you know what? I found a lab in Toronto. You know how I found them? Through Instagram.
Instagram.
That is freaking awesome.
There are some good labs, man.
I saw some of his work and I saw a couple of dentists that were posting their work.
Their cases, yeah.
And I reached out and I said, oh my God, like this lab work is beautiful. So I contacted the guy. We had a conversation. He says, look, I got a small lab. I wanted to find someone in Canada, even though I'd love to work with a couple of guys like Rigo or Bobby Williams and all that. But I just want someone in Canada where I don't have to worry that some my articulator gets stuck at the border, which happens sometimes.
No, my goodness.
And they look at it and it's like, what the hell? So I finally developed this relationship with this guy. And you know what? Here's the thing. And I think you do this as well. You have to be comfortable enough to be able to allow the lab to call you and give you shit. If you give them a lousy prep.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
And we don't live in that. We live in a world where they figure it out, send it back to you. I mean, I ask the question, nobody, you know, if you ask 9 out of 10 dentists, all of them are going to say that they haven't gotten a crown sent back to them, you know.
Right.
That's crap. They're not all getting good prep questions.
Right. And so I did that with my lab that I used for 22 years analog. And I, even with the new guy, when I talked to Yuzo, I say, look, and he said to me, he says, Presh, this is good, but there's a tooth here. I just can't see it properly. I can guess it. And I go, no, you're not going to guess it. I'm going to bring the patient back. He goes, oh, you don't mind? I go, no, I want you to guarantee your work. If I give you a good impression, you're going to guarantee it, right? He's like, yeah. And I go, well, then I'll bring it back and don't worry. I'll figure it out.
It's going to be that's awesome.
But that's what I do. We don't fudge a lot of that stuff because you know what? it goes back to chair time, Sully. If I have to redo that, and even if the lab doesn't charge me, blown an hour or 30 minutes of chair time, I'm in the negative. It doesn't help. So what do you do with the lab? I send photos. I don't shy away from doing a single crown, anterior crown or veneer, because I know that they do a good job. So photos, the lighting, then get Bollywas to show you how to take it with the
with the polarized. He does a good job.
He does a good job. So I think those are the things that I do. And but the big thing is I would interview the lab. I would give them permission to make you accountable. And then I would also make sure that they're going to be accountable, that it's not a thing about, hey, who's to blame? Great. Well, how do we solve this problem that's not working? And I'm in it with you.
Yeah. This is one thing I think to finalize it is what I realize is this is what's happening with the labs. The good quality work that you want to finish is going to take a little bit longer than usual. And that's what I have to say okay to that. And that's because sometimes when you want it fast, and the patient, of course, is putting all the pressure because they've been without tooth for 6 months or 8 months. So you're like, oh, I want it this day. Then you're going to get something not what you're looking for. And some of those people, like you said, somebody that has a small lab, those are the good quality, some of the things that you say, because they spent a good bit of time making sure that crown is going to be on point.
No, absolutely.
Versus the big labs that they're going to make 40 of them.
and I'm being honest with the patients. See, in Canada, we have to disclose our labs separate from our dental fee.
Oh, really?
It's just the way we have
to
do it. Wow. That is crazy.
So here's what I do. I basically tell the patient, I go, look, here's my dental fee, and I can find you a local lab, and the aesthetics is going to be okay. Or I can send it to another lab where it's going to be wow. But you know what? It's going to cost $300 extra a unit.
That's kind of awesome, actually.
A lot of people are starting doing that. Like boutique lab, they tell the patient, right, no problem. If you want a Nissan lab versus a Mercedes lab, and here's the price.
And then when you first said that, I was kind of like, oh, that sucks. Because you kind of, I guess you get scared about showing your own fee, because dentists are just insecure about their own fees anyways. And then when you say it, it's like, oh my gosh, that's actually awesome, because
it's out of your hands.
Really,
it's not my
fault. Look, you're gonna have some patients don't give a crap. Like, just send it to the local lab, whatever. But then the ones that you have to remake things, that you have to send shades back.
You gotta charge
the ones
extra.
That are picky to begin with are all gonna pick the nice lab. And if they don't and they get a lab, you're like, well, I would have loved to have sent it to the other guy.
How's your experience been? What is your percentage of patients sending it to the they want?
The
is
more it, expensive guess, one. Right. The less expensive
or
one.
How's that conversation goes? Because I've been thinking about telling them, and then I keep going to the better lab without even charging them extra, just because I know they're going to be picky. I'm like, I don't know how to bring this up. But then how does that go?
I just tell them.
when I'm doing anterior crown work now, I just... You know, I give them both options, but I say, you know, I just say, look, like, hey, you know, you're pulling your lip up here and you're looking at everything like, you know, we're not going to use this local lab. And here's where the fee is, because if I do that, you're going to come back and want it redone. And once I bond it in, I'm not taking them off. You're paying for them again. And so they do that. So I agree with you on that. If it's, but the ones that are still, if they're a little leery and they're price conscious, I give them both options, but I would say probably, you know, most of them will choose the higher end lab because they're like, okay, no, I really want this to look nice.
And percentage wise, I imagine, I mean, let's say your fee is $1,000 for a unit and the lab fee is $300 versus $100. Well, relatively speaking, what they're spending is worth the extra. It's only like an extra 15%, 20% to pay for that extra fee. So
that makes sense.
Do you all take insurance too?
It's the same as you guys. We don't have HMOs and PPOs, but we do have, the same $1,500 is the same for 25 years. One molar endo and it's done, right?
What was Bill Barrera's, his fees were like?
Crazy.
He was like, he's like $1,000 a unit or something.
No,
like that.
I mean, even, see, I think like some of the labs that Dr. Coyce mentioned, I think some of my friends were calling him and they're like, how much? And they're like, this is how much it's going to be.
That's I was like, I want to do a case with you. I was like,
no, know, it's almost, I've heard of, honestly, I've heard of $11,000 for a zirconia or a Picton framework, like a full arch.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
$11,000 for the actual prosthetic. I'm like, what, how much do you charge? $40,000 to make up for the time? Yeah. I don't know.
No, it's crazy, right? It is. I know. It's it's hard.
Man, it's been awesome. I'm excited to have you. Also, one thing I didn't even mention throughout this whole thing, the big DIA, the Dental Influencer Alliance. So he's going to be there. So for everybody who's listening to this episode, would love to come into LA DoubleTree here December 7th and 8th. Or is it 6th and 7th?
7th and 8th.
Google it.
Google it.
Are you guys going to have a booth?
Yes, we're going to have a podcast booth. We're going to have a podcast booth. Sully is still figuring out day.
I'm actually having my first child November 18th. So
awesome.
If and around there. So I'm not sure what my availability is going to be. we're going to have to play that one by ear.
We're going to have to play that by ear.
Yeah, you might have to Skype in.
Yeah, I might be Skype in.
I was thinking of getting with Sonata and Zellers and maybe do something joint together with the podcast Millennial in the back. Something like that. But no, it's exciting. There's a lot of cool stuff. I want to get an episode of just the DIA to where we talk about what is this whole DIA about that everybody's talking about. And that's the whole concept of everything we talked to you about was a big part of influencing. And that's why we have a lot of people just like Dr. Perez Shaw that are going to be there influencing a lot of young dentists. So it's super, super cool and exciting.
If you want some help, I'll sit with you for a while too. Just name it.
Yep. Yes, that'd be fantastic. You're going to be a podcast veteran.
Yes,
you
know, he's good.
Hey, co-host. Doc, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. This has been fantastic.
Thank you.
Everyone, work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.